A wealthy couple went on a trip to Hawaii, and one afternoon the wife went down to the beach, and after a while her husband walked down to the beach and he saw a group of people there trying to help someone, and he realized that it was his wife, and he ran up to them and he said, "What are you doing?" And they replied, "We're giving her artificial respiration." He said, "Artificial, nothing. Give it a real thing. We can afford it." When we read about these three mysterious men that Calvin read about, coming from the East, we need not be concerned about their long journey, about them being away from home, the expensive gifts that they brought with them. They could afford it. There was nothing artificial about who they were, what they did, and what they brought with them. We now come to the end of the Christmas story. And today we're going to look at the three wise men as they honor the King of Kings. In Matthew's gospel, we have the account of the visit of the wise men who came to see the Messiah, the King of Kings. We often refer to them, to the wise men, as kings, but we're not really sure of what they were and who they were. But the Greek word for them, the wise men, is magi, which means wise men or astrologers or magicians. They may have been kings, but we're not sure. But they were at least some combination of royal priests who studied the stars. Matthew tells us that these wise men came from the east to the city of Jerusalem. And when they got there, they began to ask around. And they said, "Where is he who was born King of the Jews? For we have seen this star, and we've come to worship him." Now Herod, the king, heard about this. And of course, he became very, very concerned. He was afraid. He was fearful of any threat to his power. And anything that upset Herod upset Jerusalem. Now, we've heard this. When mama's happy, the whole household is happy. Well, that's the way it was with Herod, because the people never knew what he was going to do next. He learns from the priest and to the scribe and the scribes that the Messiah was to be born in Bethlehem. So he calls these three travelers to him and he sends them out to find this newborn king. Now it's interesting that the priest, the scribes, the Pharisees, and the Levites, and all of the holy men of Israel were not even interested in going to seek this new baby that had been born. They didn't want to find out. But who it is this trio of Gentile holy men. They're the ones who make the trip. So these three men leave the city to find the king. For a while, they had lost sight of the star. You remember that last week in the children's program? But they soon saw the star again. But they followed the light until they see it has come to stop over the place where the child was. And they were overwhelmed with joy. They went inside and they found the Messiah, the Christ child, the King of Kings. The question is, what do you do in the presence of a king? This was not just any king. He was the long-awaited Messiah, King of the Jews, who would be the Messiah who ushers in the new age of God's kingdom over all creation. What do you do in the presence of such a king? as we move away from Christmas, we see in these three wise men what all wise men and women should do in the presence of the King of Kings. They were wise enough to kneel before him. That's the first thing to remember. They knew that that was the appropriate response for them. St. Matthew tells us that when they came into the place where the child was, they knelt down. Everybody always knelt down in the presence of a king. It was just a thing to do. I wonder, would you be willing to do that even now? Would you be willing to kneel before him? That's always the appropriate response to Christmas, the coming of the King of Kings, and the presence, his presence with us today. We kneel before Christ from wherever we have come, wherever we are, and that's our expression of our love for him and what he has done for us. That's what Christmas calls us to do. One of the kings of England had some of his friends come to share a meal with him. And when he came into the room, they all stood up. And he looked a little embarrassed, and he said to them, "Oh, my special friends, I'm not the Lord, you know." And one of the men replied, "Sir, if you were, we would not stand. We would all kneel before you." That's what you do in the presence of this king. I hope that we're wise enough to do that. The wise men were also wise enough to worship him. That's the second thing to remember. They knew that that was the appropriate response for them. St. Matthew tells us that when they came into the place where the child was, they not only knelt, but they worshiped him. Some translations say that they pay him homage. Everybody paid homage to a king. They often worshiped the king. It was the thing to do. I wonder, would you be willing to do that even now? Would you be willing to worship him? That's always the appropriate response to Christmas, the coming of the King of Kings and his presence among us today. We worship Christ because we accept his kingdom and his ways. That's what Christmas calls us to do. There was once a television documentary on the story of Father Kolbe, a Catholic priest in Poland. The Nazis had discovered that he had been hiding and protecting Jews. And when they found out, they arrested him, and they sent him to one of their death camps. And one day, someone escaped from the camp, and for retaliation, the Nazis decided that they were going to kill 10 of the prisoners because of that. And one of them that was selected was a Polish army sergeant. He begged and pleaded for his life because he had wife and children. Father Kolbe stepped up, and he volunteered to take the place of this army sergeant. He gave his own life. And they said after that, the camp was just filled with light because of what he had done. Here is an example of a person who's willing to worship Christ, to pay him homage, not just by words, by his action, by his deed. That's what we do in the presence of a king. I hope we're wise enough to worship him. These wise men were also wise enough to offer gifts to him. That's the third thing to remember. They knew that that was the appropriate response. St. Matthew tells us that when they came into the place where the child was, they not only knelt and worshiped him, they also opened their treasures and offered him gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Everybody always brought gifts to the king. It was the thing to do. I wonder, would you be willing to do that even now? Would you be willing to bring him gifts? That's the appropriate response to Christmas, the coming of the King of Jews and his presence with us today. We give gifts to Christ because we know that he is God's gift to us. That is what Christmas calls us to do. Love for Christ and his kingdom always calls us to give whatever is needed. It's our love for this King of Kings that calls forth from us the very best that we have to give to him. And it calls us to give him our lives. You heard it from the children. The greatest gift, the gift of ourselves. All that we are, all that we have, and all that we hope to be. That's what we do in the presence of the King. I hope we're wise enough to give him the very best gift that we have, and that's ourselves. Kneeling before him, worshiping him, giving our best gifts will bring us together with him in Bethlehem. And when we come together in Bethlehem with the King and the King of Kings, all of our life is set in order. It comes together. No matter what happens, we will serve him, and we will know that he's going to always be with us. This time between Christmas and Epiphany is called Christmastide, or the Christmas season. And sometimes we even refer to it as 12 days of Christmas. Epiphany is the day that the church has long as observed as the time of the visit of the wise men to the Christ child. There's a song that we hear called the 12 days of Christmas, which most of us know as being an old English folk song. You remember, on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Well, Father William J. Bosch gives us the story of that song in his book, Storytelling the Word. He writes that the song was composed by two Catholic Jesuits in the 16th century. By then, the Catholic Church and the Catholic faith had been outlawed in England. Death and punishment were the imprisonment were the punishment for being Catholic. But two Jesuits wrote a song of hope for all Catholics in England, and they sang it to bolster their faith and commitment in a very difficult time. Here is the real meaning of that song. 12 drummers drumming were the 12 beliefs that were outlined in the Apostles' Creed. 11 pipers piping were the 11 apostles minus Judas. 10 lords leaping were the 10 commandments. 9 ladies dancing were the 9 choirs of angels. 8 maids a milking were the Beatitudes. 7 swans a swimming were the 7 sacraments of the Catholic Church. 6 geese a-laying were the 6 precepts of the Church. 5 golden rings were the first 5 books of the Old Testament. 4 calling birds were the 4 Gospels. 3 French hens signified the 3 gifts that the wise men brought. 2 turtle doves were the Old and the New Testament. A partridge in a pear tree is Jesus Christ, who reigns victoriously from the cross. Maybe next time that you sing this, it will have a far deeper meaning. So on Christmas Day, my true love, God, gave to me a partridge and a pear tree, his son, Jesus Christ. And he is why we come to Bethlehem and we come together with him. And he is why everything comes together in Bethlehem. We know that he is with us no matter what, and no matter what, he will reign forever.